every time you say trust me, I trust you a little less, I hissed. But Mal and I did stay, unsure of what our next move might be. Sturmhand hadn't bound us or put us under heavy guard. He'd provided us with clean, dry clothes. If we wanted to, we could try to slip past Tolia and Tamar and escape back across the fold. It wasn't as if anyone could follow us. We could emerge anywhere we liked along its western shore. But where would we go after that? Sturmhand had changed. Our situation hadn't. We had no money, no allies, and we were still being hunted by the Darkling. And I wasn't eager to return to the fold, not after what had happened aboard the Hummingbird. I pushed down a bleak bubble of laughter. If I was actually thinking of taking refuge on the Unsea, things were very bad indeed. A servant entered with a large tray. He set down a pitcher of water, a bottle of kvass, and glasses, and several small plates of zakuski. Each of the dishes was bordered in gold and emblazoned with a double eagle. I considered the food. Smoked sprats on black bread, marinated beets, stuffed eggs. We hadn't had a meal since the previous night, aboard the Volkvolni. And using my power had left me famished, but I was too nervous to eat. "What happened back there?" Mal asked, as soon as the servant departed. I shook out my knuckles again. "I lost my temper. That's not what I meant. What happened on the fold?" I studied a little pot of herbed butter, turning the dish in my hands. "I saw him." "I was just tired," I said lightly. "You used a lot more of your power when we escaped from the Nichevoya. And you never faltered. Is it the fetter?" "The fetter makes me stronger," I said, tugging the edge of my sleeve over the sea whip's scales. "Besides, I've been wearing it for weeks. There was nothing wrong with my power, but there might be something wrong with me." I traced an invisible pattern on the tabletop. "When we were fighting the Volkra, did they sound different to you?" I asked.
"Different how?"
"More human?" Mal frowned.
"No. They sounded pretty much like they always do. Like monsters who want to eat us."
He laid his hand over mine.
"What happened, Alina?"
"I saw him. I told you, I was tired. I lost focus." He drew back.
"If you want to lie to me, go ahead. But I'm not going to pretend to believe you."
"Why not?" asked Sturmhand, stepping into the tent. "It's only common courtesy." Instantly we were on our feet, ready to fight. Sturmhand stopped short and lifted his hands in a gesture of peace. He changed into a dry uniform. A bruise was beginning to form on his cheek. Cautiously, he removed his sword and hung it on a post by the tent flap.
"I'm just here to talk," he said.
"So talk," Mal retorted. "Who are you? And what are you playing at?"
"Nikolai Lentsov. But please don't make me recite my titles again. It's no fun for anybody. And the only important one is Prince."
"And what about Sturmhand?" I asked.
"I'm also Sturmhand, commander of the Volkvolni, scourge of the true sea."
"Scourge?"
"Well, I'm vexing at the very least."
I shook my head. "Impossible."
"Improbable."
"This is not the time to try to be entertaining."
"Please," he said in a conciliatory tone. "Sit. I don't know about you, but I find everything much more understandable when seated. Something about circulation, I suspect. Reclining is, of course, preferable, but
I don't think we're on those kind of terms yet.
I didn't budge. Mal crossed his arms.
All right, well, I'm going to sit.
I find playing the returning hero a most wearying task.
And I'm positively worn out.
He crossed to the table, poured himself a glass of kvass, and settled into a chair with a contented sigh. He took a sip and grimaced.
Awful stuff, he said. Never could stomach it.
Then order some brandy, Your Highness, I said irritably. I'm sure they'll bring you all you want.
His face brightened. True enough. I suppose I could bathe in a tub of it. I may just.
Mal threw up his hands in exasperation and walked to the flap of the tent to look out at the camp. You can't honestly expect us to believe any of this, I said. Sturmhand wiggled his fingers to better display his ring.
I do have the royal seal, I snorted.
He probably stole it from the real Prince Nikolai.
I served with Rovsky. He knows me.
Maybe you stole the prince's face, too.
He sighed. You have to understand. The only place I could safely reveal my identity was here in Ravka. Only the most trusted members of my crew knew who I really was. Tolia, Tamar, Privyet, a few of the ethereal Kai. The rest, well, they're good men. But they're also mercenaries and pirates.
So you deceived your own crew? I asked.
On the seas, Nikolai Lantsov is more valuable as a hostage than as a captain. Hard to command a ship when you're constantly worried about being bashed on the head late at night and then ransomed to your royal papa.
I shook my head. None of this makes any sense. Prince Nikolai is supposed to be off somewhere studying boats or...
I did apprentice with a Fjordan shipbuilder and a Zemini gunsmith and a civil engineer from the Han province of Bol. Tried my hand at poetry for a while. The results were unfortunate. These days, being Sturmhand requires most of my attention.
Mal leaned against the tent post, arms crossed.
So, one day you decided to cast off your life of luxury and try your hand at playing pirate? Privateer, he said. And I wasn't playing at anything. I knew I could do more for Ravka as Sturmhand than lazing about at court.
And just where do the king and queen think you are? I asked.
The university at Ketterdam, he replied. Lovely place, very lofty. There's an extremely well-compensated shipping clerk sitting through my philosophy classes as we speak. Gets passable grades, answers to Nikolai, drinks copiously, and often, so no one gets suspicious.
Was there no end to this? Why?
I tried. I really did. But I've never been good at sitting still. Drove my nanny to distraction. Well, nannies. There was quite an army of them, as I recall.
I should have hit him harder. I mean, why go through this whole charade?
I'm second in line for the Ravkin throne. I nearly had to run away to do my military service. I don't think my parents would approve of my picking off Zemini pirates and breaking Fjordan blockades. They're rather fond of Sturmhand, though.
Fine, said Mal from the doorway.
You're a prince. You're a privateer. You're a prat. What do you want with us?
Sturmhand took another tentative sip of kvass and shuddered.
Your help, he said. The game has changed. The fold is expanding. The First Army is close to outright revolt. The Darkling's coup may have failed, but it shattered the Second Army, and Ravka is on the brink of collapse.
I felt a sinking sensation. And let me guess, you're just the one to put things right? Sturmhand leaned forward.
Did you meet my brother, Vasily, when you were at court? He cares more about horses and his next drink of whiskey than his people. My father never had more than a passing interest in governing Ravka, and reports are he's lost even that. This country is coming apart. Someone needs to put it back together before it's too late.
Vasily is the heir, I observed.
I think he can be convinced to step aside.
That's why you dragged us back here, I said in disgust. Because you want to be king?
I dragged you back here because the apparat has practically turned you into a living saint, and the people love you. I dragged you back here because your power is the key to Ravka's survival.
I banged my hands down on the table. You dragged me back here so you could make a grand entrance with the Sun Summoner and steal your brother's throne.
Sturmhan leaned back. I'm not going to apologize for being ambitious. It doesn't change the fact that I'm the best man for the job.
Of course you are.
Come back to Os Alta with me.
Why? So you can show me off like some kind of prize goat?
I know you don't trust me. You have no reason to. But I'll abide by what I promised you aboard the Volklolni. Listen to what I have to offer. If you're still not interested, Sturmhan's ships will take you anywhere in the world. I think you'll stay. I think I can give you something no one else can.
This ought to be good, muttered Mal.
I can give you the chance to change Ravka, said Sturmhand. I can give you the chance to bring your people hope.
Oh, is that all? I said sourly. And just how am I supposed to do that?
By helping me unite the First and Second Armies. By becoming my queen.
Before I could blink, Mal had shoved the table aside and closed in on Sturmhand, lifting him off his feet and slamming him into the tent post. Sturmhand winced but made no move to fight back.
Easy now. Mustn't get blood on the uniform. Let me explain.
Try explaining with my fist in your mouth. Sturmhand twisted, and in a flash he'd slipped from Mal's grip. A knife was in his hand, pulled from somewhere up his sleeve.
Step back, Oretsev. I'm keeping my temper for her sake. But I'd just as soon gut you like a carp.
Try it, Mal snarled. Enough! I threw out a bright shard of light that blinded them both. They put up their hands against the glare, momentarily distracted.
Sturmhand, sheathe that weapon or you'll be the one who gets gutted.
Mal, stand down. I waited until Sturmhand tucked away his knife, then slowly let the light fade. Mal dropped his hands, his fists still clenched. They eyed each other warily. Just a few hours ago, they'd been friends. Of course, Sturmhand had been a completely different person then. Sturmhand straightened the sleeves of his uniform.
I'm not proposing a love match, you heartsick oaf. Just a political alliance. If you'd stop and think for a minute, you'd see it makes good sense for the country.
Mal let out a harsh bark of laughter.
You mean it makes good sense for you? Can't both things be true? I've served in the military. I understand warfare. And I understand weaponry. I know the First Army will follow me. I may be second in line, but I have a blood right to the throne.
Mal jabbed his fingers in Sturmhan's face.
You don't have a right to her.
Some of Sturmhan's composure seemed to leave him.
What did you think was going to happen? Did you think you could just carry off one of the most powerful Grisha in the world like some peasant girl you tumbled in a barn? Is that how you think this story ends? I'm trying to keep a country from falling apart, not steal your best girl.
That's enough, I said quietly.
You can stay at the palace, Nikolai continued. Perhaps, as the captain of her personal guard, it wouldn't be the first such arrangement. A muscle jumped in Mal's jaw. You make me sick. Sturmhand gave a dismissive wave. I'm a depraved monster, I know. Just think about what I'm saying for a moment. I don't need to think about it, Mal shouted. And neither does she. It isn't going to happen. It would be a marriage in name only, Sturmhand insisted. Then, as if he couldn't help himself, he flashed Mal a taunting grin. Except for the matter of producing heirs. Mal surged forward and Sturmhand reached for his knife, but I saw what was coming and stepped between them. Stop! I shouted. Just stop it! And stop talking about me as if I'm not here! Mal released a frustrated growl and began pacing back and forth again. Sturmhand picked up a chair that had toppled and reseated himself, making a great show of stretching out his legs and pouring himself another glass of kvass. I took a breath. Your Highness. Nikolai, he corrected. But I've also been known to answer to sweetheart or handsome. Mal whirled, but I silenced him with a pleading look. You need to stop that right now, Nikolai, I said. Or I'll knock those princely teeth out myself. Nikolai rubbed his darkening bruise. I know you're good for it. I am, I said firmly. And I'm not going to marry you. Mal released a breath and some of the stiffness went out of his shoulders. It bothered me that he had thought there was any possibility I might accept Nikolai's offer, and I knew he wasn't going to like what I had to say next. I steeled myself and said, But I will return to Otz Alta with you. Mal's head jerked up. Alina! Mal, we always said we'd find a way to come back to Ravka, that we'd find a way to help. If we don't do something, there may not be a Ravka to come back to. He shook his head, but I turned to Nikolai and plunged on. I'll return to Otz Alta with you, and I'll consider helping you make a bid for the throne. I took a deep breath. But I want the Second Army. The tent got very quiet. They were looking at me like I was mad, and, truth be told, I didn't feel entirely sane. But I was done being shuffled across the true sea and half of Ravka by people trying to use me and my power. Nikolai gave a nervous laugh. The people love you, Alina, but I was thinking of a more symbolic title. I'm not a symbol, I snapped, and I'm tired of being a pawn. No, Mal said. It's too dangerous. It would be like painting a target on your back. I already have a target on my back, I said. And neither of us will ever be safe until the Darkling is defeated. Have you even held a command? Nikolai asked. I'd once led a seminar of junior mapmakers, but I didn't think that was what he meant. No, I admitted. You have no experience, no precedent, and no claim, he said. The Second Army has been led by Darklings since it was founded. By one Darkling, but this wasn't the time to explain that. Age and birthright don't matter to the Grisha. All they care about is power. I'm the only Grisha to ever wear two amplifiers, and I'm the only Grisha alive powerful enough to take on the Darkling, or his shadow soldiers. No one else can do what I can. I tried to put confidence in my voice, even though I wasn't sure what had come over me. I just knew I was tired of living in fear. I was tired of running, and if Mal and I were to have any hope of locating the Firebird, we needed answers. The little palace might be the only place to find them. For a long moment, the three of us just stood there. Well, Nikolai said. Well... He drummed his fingers on the tabletop, considering. Then he rose and offered me his hand.
All right, summoner, he said. Help me win the people, and the Grisha are yours.
Really? I blurted.
Nikolai laughed. If you plan to lead an army, you'd better learn to act the part. The proper response is, I knew you'd see sense.
I took his hand. It was roughly calloused. The hand of a pirate, not a prince. We shook.
As for my proposal, he began.
Don't push your luck, I said, snatching my hand back. I said I'd go with you to Os Alta, and that's it.
And where will I go?
Mal said quietly. He stood with his arms crossed, watching us with steady blue eyes. There was blood on his brow from the crash of the hummingbird. He looked tired and very, very far away.
I thought you'd go with me,
I stammered.
As what? He asked. The captain of your personal guard?
I flushed. Nikolai cleared his throat.
As much as I'd love to see how this plays out, I do have some arrangements to make. Unless, of course, get out, Mal ordered. Right then, I'll leave you to it.
He hastened away, stopping only to retrieve his sword. The silence in the tent seemed to stretch and expand.
Where is all this going, Alina? Mal asked. We fought our way out of this saint's forsaken place, and now we're sinking right back into the swamp.
I lowered myself to the cot and rested my head in my hands. I was exhausted, and every bone in my body ached. What am I supposed to do? I pleaded. What's happening here? What's happening to Ravka? Part of the blame belongs to me.
That isn't true.
I gave a hollow laugh.
Oh, yes, it is. If it weren't for me, the fold wouldn't be growing. Novokrebirsk would still be standing. Alina, Mal said, crouching down in front of me and laying his hands on my knees. Even with all the Grisha and 1,000 of Sturmhahn's guns, you aren't strong enough to stop him.
If we had the third amplifier,
but we don't.
I gripped his hands.
We will.
He held my gaze.
Did it ever occur to you that I might say no?
My stomach dropped. It hadn't. It had never entered my mind that Mal might refuse, and I felt suddenly ashamed. He had given up everything to be with me, but that didn't mean he was happy about it. Maybe he'd had enough of fighting and fear and uncertainty. Maybe he'd had enough of me.
I thought
we both wanted to help Ravka.
Is that what we both wanted?
He asked. He stood up and turned his back on me. I swallowed hard, forcing down the sudden ache in my throat.
Then you won't go to Os Alta?
He paused at the entrance of the tent.
You wanted to wear the second amplifier. You have it. You want to go to Os Alta. Fine. We'll go. You say you need the Firebird? I'll find a way to get it for you. But when this is all over, Alina, I wonder if you'll still want me.
I shot to my feet.
Of course I will, now!
Whatever I might have said, he didn't wait to hear it. He stepped out into the sunlight and was gone. I pressed the heels of my hands against my eyes, trying to push down the tears that threatened. What was I doing? I wasn't a queen. I wasn't a saint. And I certainly didn't know how to lead an army. I caught a glimpse of myself in a soldier's shaving mirror that had been propped on the bedside table. I pulled my coat and shirt to the side, baring the wound at my shoulder. The puncture marks from the Nichevoya stood out, puckered and black against my skin.
The Darkling had said they would never heal completely. What wound couldn't be healed by Grisha power?
One made by something that never should have existed in the first place.
I saw him, the Darkling's face, pale and beautiful. The slash of the knife, it had been so real. What had happened on the fold?
Going back to Os Alta, taking control of the Second Army, was as good as a declaration of war. The Darkling would know where to find me, and when he was strong enough, he'd come looking. Ready or not, we'd have no choice but to make a stand. It was a terrifying thought, but I was surprised to find that it also brought me some relief. I would face him, and one way or another, this would end.
Chapter 10. We didn't leave for Os Alta right away, but spent the next 3 days transporting shipments of goods across the fold. We operated out of what was left of the military encampment at Krybirsk. Most of the troops had been pulled back when the fold started expanding. A new watchtower had been erected to monitor the black shores of the Unsea, and only a skeleton crew stayed on to operate the dry docks. Not a single Grisha remained at the encampment. After the Darkling's attempted coup and the destruction of Novokrybirsk, a wave of anti-Grisha sentiment had swept through Ravka and the ranks of the First Army. I wasn't surprised. An entire town was gone, its people food for monsters. Ravka wouldn't soon forget. Neither could I. Some Grisha had fled to Os Alta to seek the protection of the king. Others had gone into hiding. Nikolai suspected that most of them had sought out the Darkling and defected to his side. But with the help of Nikolai's rogue squallers, we managed 2 trips across the fold on the first day, 3 on the second, and 4 on the last. Sand skiffs journeyed to West Ravka empty and returned with huge cargoes of Zemini rifles, crates full of ammunition, parts for repeating guns similar to those Nikolai had used aboard the Hummingbird, and a few tons of sugar and jerda, all courtesy of Sturmhahn's smuggling. "Bribes," Mal said, as we watched giddy soldiers tear into a shipment being unloaded on the dock, hooting and marveling over the glittering array of weaponry.
"Gifts," Nikolai corrected. "You'll find the bullets work, regardless of my motives."
He turned to me.
"I think we can fit in one more trip today. Game?"
I wasn't, but I nodded. He smiled and clapped me on the back.
"I'll give the orders."
I could feel Mal watching me as I turned to look into the shifting darkness of the fold. There hadn't been a recurrence of the incident aboard the Hummingbird. Whatever I'd seen that day, vision, hallucination, I couldn't name it. It hadn't happened again. Still, I spent each moment on the Unsea, alert and wary, trying to hide just how frightened I really was. Nikolai wanted to use the crossings to hunt Volkra, but I refused. I told him that I still felt weak, and that I wasn't sure enough about my power to guarantee our safety. My fear was real, but the rest was a lie. My power was stronger than ever. It flowed from me in pure and vibrant waves, radiant with the strength of the stag and the scales. But I couldn't bear the thought of hearing those screams again. I kept the light in a wide, glowing dome around the skiffs, and though the Volkra shrieked and beat their wings, they kept their distance. Mal accompanied us on all the crossings, staying close by my side, rifle at the ready. I knew he sensed my anxiousness, but he didn't press me for an explanation. In fact, he hadn't said much at all since our argument in the tent. I was afraid that when he did start talking, I wouldn't like what he had to say. I hadn't changed my mind about returning to Os Alta. but I was worried that he might. The morning we decamped for the capital, I searched the crowd for him, terrified that he might just decide not to show up. I said a little prayer of thanks when I glimpsed him, straight-backed and silent in his saddle, waiting to join the column of riders. We set out before dawn, a twisting procession of horses and wagons that wended its way out of camp on the broad road known as the Vi. Nikolai had obtained a plain blue kefta for me, but it was tucked away in the luggage. Until he had more of his own men in place to guard me, I was just another soldier in the prince's retinue. As the sun crested the horizon, I felt a small flutter of hope. The idea of trying to take the Darkling's place, of attempting to reassemble the Grisha and command the Second Army, still felt impossibly daunting, but at least I was doing something instead of just fleeing from the Darkling or waiting for him to snatch me up. I had two of Morozova's amplifiers, and I was headed to a place where I might find answers that would lead me to the third. Mal was unhappy, but watching the morning light break over the treetops, I felt sure I could bring him around. My mood didn't survive the journey through Kribirsk. We'd passed through the ramshackle port town after the crash on the lake, but I'd been too shaken and distracted to really take note of the way the place had changed. This time it was unavoidable. Though Kribirsk had never had much beauty to recommend it, its sidewalks had teemed with travelers and merchants, kingsmen and dock workers. Its bustling streets had been lined with busy stores, ready to outfit expeditions into the fold, along with bars and brothels that catered to the soldiers at the encampment. But these streets were quiet and nearly empty. Most of the inns and shops had been boarded up. The real revelation came when we reached the church. I remembered it as a tidy building capped by bright blue domes. Now, the whitewashed walls were covered in writing, row after row of names written in red paint that had dried to the color of blood. The steps were littered with heaps of withered flowers, small painted icons, the melted stubs of prayer candles. I saw bottles of kvass, piles of candy, the abandoned body of a child's doll. Gifts for the dead. I scanned the names. Stefan Rushkin, 57. Anya Sirenka, 13. Mika Lasky, 45. Rebecca Lasky, 44. Peter Otserov, 22. Marina Koska, 19. Valentin Yomki, 72. Sasha Penkin, 8 months. They went on and on. My fingers tightened on the reins as a cold fist closed over my heart. Memories came back to me unbidden. A mother running with a child in her arms. A man stumbling as the darkness caught him. His mouth open in a scream. An old woman, confused and frightened, swallowed by the panicked crowd. I'd seen it all. I'd made it possible. These were the people of Novokribirsk, the city that had once stood directly across from Kribirsk on the other side of the fold, a sister city full of relatives, friends, business partners, people who had worked the docks and manned the skiffs, some who must have survived multiple crossings. They'd lived on the edge of a horror, thinking they were safe in their own homes, walking the streets of their little port town. And now they were all gone, because I'd failed to stop the Darkling. Mal brought his horse up beside mine. "Alina," he said softly, "come away." I shook my head. I wanted to remember. Tasha Stoll, Andrei Bazin, Shura Rychenko. As many as I could. They'd been murdered by the Darkling. Did they haunt his sleep the way they haunted mine? "We have to stop him, Mal," I said hoarsely. "We have to find a way." I don't know what I hoped he would say. but he remained silent. I wasn't sure Mal wanted to make me any more promises. Eventually he rode on, but I forced myself to read every single name, and only then did I turn to go, guiding my horse back into the deserted street. A bit of life seemed to return to Krybirsk as we moved farther away from the fold. A few shops were open, and there were still merchants hawking their wares on the stretch of the Vi known as Peddler's Way. Rickety tables lined the road, their surfaces covered in brightly colored cloth and spread with a jumble of merchandise. Boots and prayer shawls, wooden toys, shoddy knives in hand-tooled sheaths. Many of the tables were littered with what looked like bits of rock and chicken bones.
Trovenye osti, the peddler shouted. Auchenye osti.
Real bone. Genuine bone. As I leaned over my horse's head to get a better look, an old man called out,
Alina!
I looked up in surprise. Did he know me? Nikolai was suddenly beside me. He nudged his horse close to mine and snatched my reins, giving them a hard yank to draw me away from the table.
Нет, спасибо, he said to the old man. Alina, the peddler cried. Auchenye, Alina.
Wait, I said, twisting in my saddle, trying to get a better look at the old man's face. He was tidying up the display on his table. Without the possibility of a sale, he seemed to have lost all interest in us. Wait, I insisted. He knew me.
No, he didn't.
He knew my name, I said, angrily grabbing the reins back from him.
He was trying to sell you relics. Finger bones. Genuine Sancta Alina.
I froze, a deep chill stealing over me. My oblivious horse kept steadily on. Genuine Alina. I repeated numbly.
Nikolai shifted uneasily. There are rumors that you died on the fold. People have been selling off parts of you all over Ravka and West Ravka for months. You're quite the good luck charm.
Those are supposed to be my fingers?
Knuckles, toes, fragments of rib.
I felt sick. I looked around, hoping to spot Mal, needing to see something familiar.
Of course, Nikolai continued. If half of those were really your toes, you'd have about 100 feet. But superstition is a powerful thing. So is faith, said a voice behind me,
and when I turned I was surprised to see Tolia there, mounted on a huge black war horse, his broad face solemn. It was all too much. The optimism I'd felt only an hour ago had vanished. It suddenly seemed as if the sky were pressing down on me, closing in like a trap. I kicked my horse into a canter. I'd always been a clumsy rider, but I held on tight and did not stop until Krybirsk was far behind me, and I no longer heard the rattling of bones. That night, we stayed at an inn in the little village of Vernost, where we met up with a heavily armed group of soldiers from the First Army. I soon learned that many of them were from the 22nd, the regiment Nikolai had served with and eventually helped lead in the northern campaign. Apparently the prince wanted to be surrounded by friends when he entered Osalta. I couldn't blame him. He seemed to relax in their presence, and once again, I noticed his demeanor change. He'd transitioned effortlessly from the role of glib adventurer to arrogant prince, and now he'd become a beloved commander, a soldier who laughed easily with his companions and knew each commoner's name. The soldiers had a lavish coach in tow. It was lacquered in pale Ravkin blue and emblazoned with the king's double eagle on one side. Nikolai had ordered a golden sunburst added to the other, and it was drawn by a matched team of 6 white horses. As the glittering contraption rumbled into the inn's courtyard, I had to roll my eyes, remembering the excesses of the grand palace. Maybe bad taste was inherited. I had hoped to eat dinner alone with Mal in my room, but Nikolai had insisted that we all dine together in the inn's common room. So instead of relaxing by the fire in peace, we were jammed elbow to elbow at a noisy table packed with officers. Mal hadn't said a word throughout the entire meal, but Nikolai talked enough for all three of us. As he dug into a dish of braised oxtail, he ran through a seemingly endless list of places he intended to stop on the way to Ols Alta. Just listening to him wore me out. I didn't realize winning the people meant meeting every single one of them, I grumbled. Aren't we in a hurry?
Ravka needs to know its sun summoner has returned.
And its wayward prince?
Him too. Gossip will do more than royal pronouncements.
And that reminds me, he said, lowering his voice.
From here on out, you need to behave as if someone is watching every minute.
He gestured between me and Mal with his fork.
What you do in private is your own affair. Just be discreet.
I nearly choked on my wine.
What?
I sputtered.
It's one thing for you to be linked with a royal prince. Quite another for people to think you're tumbling a peasant.
I'm not... It's nobody's business, I whispered furiously.
I darted a glance at Mal. His teeth were clenched, and he was gripping his knife a little too tightly.
Power is alliance, said Nikolai. It's everyone's business.
He took another sip of wine as I glared at him in disbelief.
And you should be wearing your own colors.
I shook my head, thrown by the change of subject.
Now you're choosing my clothes?
I was wearing the blue kefta, but clearly Nikolai wasn't satisfied.
If you intend to lead the Second Army and take the Darkling's place, then you need to look the part.
Summoners wear blue, I said irritably.
Don't underestimate the power of the grand gesture, Alina. The people like spectacle. The Darkling understood that.
I'll think about it.
Might I suggest gold?
Nikolai went on.
Very regal. Very appropriate.
Very tacky.
Gold and black would be best. Perfect symbolism and
no black, Mal said. He pushed back from the table and without another word disappeared into the crowded room. I set down my fork. I can't tell if you're deliberately making trouble or if you're just an ass. The prince took another bite of his dinner.
He doesn't like black?
It's the color of the man who tried to kill him and regularly takes me hostage. My sworn enemy?
All the more reason to claim that color as your own.
I craned my neck to see where Mal had gone. Through the doorway, I watched him take a seat by himself at the bar.
No,
I said. No black.
As you like, Nikolai replied.
But choose something for yourself and your guards. I sighed. Do I really need guards? Nikolai leaned back in his chair and studied me, his face suddenly serious.
Do you know how I got the name Sturmhund?
He asked. I thought it was some kind of joke, a play on Sobotchka.
No, he said. It's a name I earned. The first enemy ship I ever boarded was a Fjerdan trader out of Jerholm. When I told the captain to lay down his sword, he laughed in my face and told me to run home to my mother. He said Fjerdan men make bread from the bones of skinny Rothkin boys.
So you killed him?
No. I told him foolish old captains weren't fit meat for Ravkin men. Then I cut off his fingers and fed them to my dog while he watched.
You...
What?
The room was packed with rowdy soldiers, singing, shouting, telling stories. But it all fell away as I stared at Nikolai in stunned silence. It was as if I was watching him transform again, as if the charming mask had shifted to reveal a very dangerous man.
You heard me. My enemies understood brutality, and so did my crew. After it was over, I drank with my men and divvied up the spoils. Then I went back to my cabin, vomited up the very fine dinner my steward had prepared, and cried myself to sleep. But that was the day I became a real privateer, and that was the day Sturmhund was born.
So much for puppy, I said, feeling a bit nauseated myself.
I was a boy trying to lead an undisciplined crew of thieves and rogues against enemies who were older, wiser, and tougher. I needed them to fear me. All of them. And if they hadn't, more people would have died.
I pushed my plate away.
Just whose fingers are you telling me to cut off?
I'm telling you that if you want to be a leader, it's time you started thinking and acting like one.
I've heard this before, you know, from the Darkling and his supporters. Be brutal, be cruel. More lives will be saved in the long run.
Do you think I'm like the Darkling?
I studied him. The golden hair, the sharp uniform, those two clever hazel eyes.
No, I said slowly. I don't think you are.
I rose to go join Mal.
But I've been wrong before. The journey to Os Alta was less a march than a slow, excruciating parade. We stopped at every town along the Vi, at farms, schools, churches, and dairies. We greeted local dignitaries and walked the wards of hospitals. We dined with war veterans and applauded girls' choirs. It was hard not to notice that the villages were mostly populated by the very young and the very old. Every able body had been drafted to serve in the king's army and fight in Ravka's endless wars. The cemeteries were as big as the towns. Nikolai handed out gold coins and sacks of sugar. He accepted handshakes from merchants and kisses on the cheek from wrinkled matrons who called him Sobachka, and charmed anyone who came within 2 feet of him. He never seemed to tire, never seemed to flag. No matter how many miles we'd ridden or people we'd met, he was ready to meet another. He always seemed to know what people wanted from him, when to be the laughing boy, the golden prince, the weary soldier. I suppose it was the training that came with being born a royal and raised at court, but it was still unnerving to watch. He hadn't been kidding about spectacle. He always tried to time our arrivals at dawn or dusk, or he'd stop our processions in the deep shadows of a church or a town square, all the better to show off the sun summoner. When he caught me rolling my eyes, he just winked and said,
"Everyone thinks you're dead lovely. It's important to make a good showing."
So I held up my end of the bargain and acted my part. I smiled graciously and called the light to shine over rooftops and steeples and bathe every awestruck face in warmth. People wept. Mothers brought me their babies to kiss, and old men bowed over my hand, their cheeks damp with tears. I felt like a complete fraud, and I said as much to Nikolai.
"What do you mean?" he asked, genuinely puzzled. "The people love you."
"You mean they love your prize goat," I grumbled as we rode out of one town.
"Have you actually won any prizes?"
"This isn't funny," I whispered angrily. "You've seen what the Darkling can do. These people will be sending their sons and daughters to fight Nichivoya, and I won't be able to save them.
You're feeding them a lie."
"We're giving them hope. That's better than nothing."
"Spoken like a man who's never had nothing," I said, and wheeled my horse away. Ravka in summer was at its most lovely, its fields thick with gold and green, the air balmy and sweet with the scent of warm hay. Despite Nikolai's protests, I insisted on foregoing the comforts of the coach. My bottom was sore and my thighs complained loudly when I eased from the saddle every night. But sitting my own horse meant fresh air and the chance to seek out Mal on each day's ride. He didn't talk much, but he seemed to be thawing a bit. Nikolai had circulated the story of how the Darkling had tried to execute Mal on the fold.
It had earned Mal instant trust among the soldiers, even a small measure of celebrity. Occasionally he scouted with the trackers in the unit, and he was trying to teach Tolia how to hunt, though the big Grisha wasn't much for stalking silently through the woods. On the road out of Sala, we were passing through a stand of white elms, when Mal cleared his throat and said,
"I was thinking..."
I sat up straight and gave him my full attention. It was the first time he'd initiated a conversation since we'd left Krybirsk. He shifted in his saddle, not meeting my eye.
"I was thinking of who we could get to round out the guard."
I frowned. "The guard?" He cleared his throat.
"For you, a few of Nikolai's men seem all right, and I think Tolia and Tamar should be considered. They're Shu, but they're Grisha, so it shouldn't be a problem. And there's, well, me."
I didn't think I'd ever actually seen Mal blush. I grinned. "Are you saying you want to be the captain of my personal guard?" Mal glanced at me, his lips quirking in a smile.
"Do I get to wear a fancy hat?"
"The fanciest," I said, "and possibly a cape."
"Will there be plumes?"
"Oh, yes, several."
"Then I'm in."
I wanted to leave it at that, but I couldn't seem to help myself. I thought you might want to go back to your unit to be a tracker again." Mal studied the knot in his reins.
"I can't go back. Hopefully Nikolai can keep me from being hanged."
"Hopefully?" I squeaked.
"I deserted my post, Alina. Not even the king can make me a tracker again."
Mal's voice was steady, untroubled. "He adapts," I thought. But I knew some part of him would always grieve for the life he'd been meant to have, the life he would have had without me. He nodded up ahead to where Nikolai's back was barely visible in the column of riders.
"And there's no way I'm leaving you alone with Prince Perfect."
"So you don't trust me to resist his charms?"
"I don't even trust myself. I've never seen anyone work a crowd the way he does. I'm pretty sure the rocks and trees are getting ready to swear fealty to him."
I laughed and leaned back, felt the sun warming my skin through the dappled shade of the tree boughs overhead. I touched my fingers to the sea whip's fetter, safely hidden by my sleeve. For now, I wanted to keep the second amplifier a secret. Nikolai's Grisha had been sworn to silence, and I could only hope they'd hold their tongues. My thoughts strayed to the Firebird. Some part of me still couldn't quite believe it was real. Would it look the way it had in the pages of the Red Book, its feathers wrought in white and gold, or would its wings be tipped with fire? And what kind of monster would knock an arrow and bring it down? I had refused to take the stag's life, and countless people had died because of it. The citizens of Novokrybirsk, the Grisha and soldiers I'd abandoned on the Darkling skiff. I thought of those high church walls covered in the names of the dead. Morozova's stag, Rusalia, the Firebird. Legends come to life before my eyes, just to die in front of me. I remembered the sea whip's heaving sides, the thready whistle of its last breaths. It had been on the brink of death, and still I'd hesitated. I don't want to be a killer. But mercy might not be a gift the Sun Summoner could afford. I gave myself a shake. First, we had to find the Firebird. Until then, all our hopes rested on the shoulders of one untrustworthy prince. The next day, the first pilgrims appeared. They looked like any other townspeople waiting by the road to see the royal procession roll past, but they wore armbands and carried banners emblazoned with a rising sun. Dirty from long days of travel, they hefted satchels and sacks stuffed with their few belongings, and when they caught sight of me in my blue kefta, the stag's collar around my neck, they swarmed toward my horse, murmuring, "Sancta, Sancta," and trying to grab my sleeve or my hem. Sometimes they fell to their knees, and I had to be careful or risk my horse trampling one of them. I thought I'd grown used to all the attention, even being pawed at by strangers. But this felt different. I didn't like being called Saint, and there was something hungry in their faces that set my nerves on edge. As we pushed deeper into Ravka's interior, the crowds grew. They came from every direction, from cities, towns, and ports. They clustered in village squares, and by the side of the Vi, men and women, old and young, some on foot, some astride donkeys, or crowded into hay carts. Wherever we went, they cried out to me. Sometimes I was Sancta Alina, sometimes Alina the Just, or the Bright, or the Merciful. Daughter of Keremsin, they shouted. Daughter of Ravka, daughter of the Fold. Rebe Dvastalba, they called me. Daughter of Two Mills, after the valley that was home to the nameless settlement of my birth. I had the vaguest memory of the ruins the valley was named after, two rocky spindles by the side of a dusty road. The apparat had been busy breaking open my past, sifting through the rubble to build the story of a saint. The pilgrims' expectations terrified me. As far as they were concerned, I'd come to liberate Ravka from its enemies, from the Shadowfold, from the Darkling, from poverty, from hunger, from sore feet and mosquitoes and anything else that might trouble them. They begged for me to bless them, to cure them. But I could only summon light, wave, let them touch my hand. It was all part of Nikolai's show. The pilgrims had come, not just to see me, but to follow me. They attached themselves to the royal processional, and their ragged band swelled with every passing day. They trailed us from town to town, camping in fallow fields, holding dawn vigils to pray for my safety and the salvation of Ravka. They were close to outnumbering Nikolai's soldiers. "This is the apparat's doing," I complained to Tamar one night at dinner. We were lodged at the roadhouse for the evening. Through the windows I could see the lights of the pilgrims' cook fires, hear them singing peasant songs. "These people should be home, working their fields and caring for their children, not following some false saint." Tamar pushed a piece of overcooked potato around on her plate and said, "My mother told me that Grisha power is a divine gift." "And you believed her?" "I don't have a better explanation." I set my fork down. "Tamar, we don't have a divine gift. Grisha power is just something you're born with, like having big feet or a good singing voice. That's what the Shu believe, that it's something physical, buried in your heart or your spleen, something that can be isolated and dissected." She glanced out the window to the pilgrims' camp. "I don't think those people would agree. Please don't tell me you think I'm a saint. It doesn't matter what you are. It matters what you can do." "Tamar, those people think you can save Ravka," she said. "Obviously, you do too, or you wouldn't be going to Os Alta." "I'm going to Os Alta to rebuild the Second Army." "And find the Third Amplifier?" I nearly dropped my fork.
"Keep your voice down," I sputtered.
"We saw the Istori Sanctia." So Sturmhand hadn't kept the book a secret.
"Who else knows?"
I asked, trying to regain my composure. "We're not going to tell anyone, Alina. We know what's at risk." Tamar's glass had left a damp circle on the table. She traced it with her finger and said, "You know, some people believe that all the first saints were Grisha." I frowned. "Which people?" Tamar shrugged. "Enough that their leaders were excommunicated. Some were even burned at the stake."
"I've never heard that."
"It was a long time ago. I don't understand why that idea makes people so angry. Even if the saints were Grisha, that doesn't make what they did any less miraculous." I squirmed in my chair. "I don't want to be a saint, Tamar. I'm not trying to save the world. I just want to find a way to defeat the Darkling." "Rebuild the Second Army? Defeat the Darkling?"
Destroy the fold. Free Ravka? Call it what you like, but that all sounds suspiciously like saving the world.
Well, when she put it that way, it did seem a little...